Imagine being sent to prison for a crime you had not done. This happened to my guest today, Kenyan Teresa Jerigay. Teresa is here to tell us her story and how she is tackling injustice in Kenya. Hi, Teresa. A warm welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much, Josephine, for having me.
So tell us about the day you were jailed.
I was jailed on 4th of March, 2011. 11 a.m. in the morning. I'll never forget the face on the judge that particular day. So hard as she read out that sentence, that she was sentencing me to serve a 1 year at the largest correctional institution for women in Nairobi, Kenya. And I was holding my three-month-old daughter. I was just a new mom. And here we were now, heading to the prison.
Why?
I was falsely and maliciously convicted for a crime that I had not committed. It was the loss of some funds at the bank where I worked. I had gotten arrested 2009, been through prosecution for 2.5 years. And even though there was no evidence whatsoever that I had stolen the money, all the counts on theft were all dropped. But this one charge on probability of conspiring to defraud the bank is what the magistrate used to convict me.
Why do they want to use a scapegoat? Why you particularly?
Upon my arrest, they asked me to pay them about $10,000 as a bribe, and then the case would disappear. I didn't pay the bribe. You know, when you know your values, it's very easy to make a decision. So we didn't pay the bribe, and we continued with prosecution. I was so sure that the charges would be dropped because they have no evidence. Closer to judgment, they asked me to pay another bribe of about $50,000. And they say to me, the stakes are very high now because we could convict you. And again, didn't pay the bribe to the arresting officer and the prosecutor. And so because of not paying the bribe, I ended up being convicted, even though they didn't have any evidence whatsoever.
It's so, so shocking. So you went to prison with your baby?
Yes, yes.
So tell us about walking through the door. What happened next in the prison?
It really was a very traumatizing time. First and foremost, I just couldn't process what just happened, that you could be imprisoned even though you've done nothing wrong. That shook me. So processing that.
So you're very stressed and on high alert.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then riding in that Kenya Prison Service bus, being called a criminal by the guards who were escorting me to the prison, getting into prison.
Did you have your baby in your arms at this
yes.
time?
Yes. She was with me all this time and we had nothing. No change of clothes, nothing, no plan whatsoever. Just convicted, rode on this bus, and now being admitted in prison. And, you know, the admission process was also so traumatic because they change you from your civilian clothes to the prison uniform in the open when everyone's watching. And you're not used to this kind of life where, you know, you're being naked and everyone's watching you.
So they humiliate you?
Yeah. Mm. It was too humiliating.
Mm. Did they do anything to your hair? Did they cut your hair or did they just, you know?
Thank goodness for some, you know, reforms. They no longer cut our hairs when we get admitted nowadays.
But did they take everything you own then? All your clothes, your handbag?
Yes.
But they so what did they put the baby into an outfit or could the baby stay in?
My daughter could stay in her old clothes. But also it was pretty humiliating going through the search process because they search your body in a very uncouth manner, trying to check if you have any contrabands.
So do they look up your vagina?
Yes, they do. You've got to squat and they've got to put in hands or, you know, check in there.
Oh.
Any opening, just check if you have anything. Yeah, and they keep asking you, you've got to pee, so that they see if anything will come out. And it was very humiliating.
And did it hurt?
It does. The first day in prison is the day you never forget all your life. Throughout your life, you remember every single thing that happened, from the doors banging, that admission, that cruel admission process, and then trying to figure out exactly where you'll be staying. And, you know,
I saw a video. Was it dormitories then?
Yes, it is. It's some small cubes that were built many years ago. Actually,
probably by the British.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was actually built by the Brits, and it was horse stables. Yeah. And this is where it's now been turned into the maximum security prison. So no windows, you know, just closed up space where, you know, tiny little cells, and you're tens of hundreds of women in there.
Okay, so what about your baby? What about, were you breastfeeding at the time?
Yeah, so I was breastfeeding, very stressed. And the room that I got put in, there were close to between 50 to 60 other women who had their children accompanying them to serve their sentences as well.
I'm trying to imagine the noise.
Exactly. The noise throughout, the cries, you know. And we have this little tiny hole of a toilet that the 120 of us are using, the mothers, the children. And so this small space that you use as a toilet is the same place that mothers are showering at. It's the same place you're cleaning your dish or something. It's the same place another woman is cleaning their underwear or something. It's so congested, so
squalid.
Exactly. Health conditions, not good. Definitely not a place to have your child grow up.
Did you manage to keep breastfeeding because of the stress and the diet? Tell me about the food.
Yeah, so the food was horrible. I'd call it pig style kind of food. It was this maize flour paste, which wasn't well cooked. Beans every once in a while. Porridge in the morning. It really was tough. But what I loved about the system then was that we could get cash from visitors and then buy some milk or yogurt at the prison canteen.
So you could buy some decent food at the canteen.
Yeah, okay. Not pretty not decent, but yeah. At least.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Some stuff you used
to supplement you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some yogurt.
Because you need, when you're breastfeeding, you need so many more calories to make the milk.
Very true. And to date, it's now almost 7-8 years since I left prison. I'm still struggling to, get my health completely back to where it used to be before I went to prison.
Do you think you got depressed in prison?
A lot. And the first 2-3 years post-imprisonment, when I got out, I really did get depressed. And I only got to know about it when I realized the kids have gone to school, they've come back home. It's almost 4 p.m., 5 p.m. I haven't taken a shower. I haven't moved an inch since they left for school. And I realized how depressed I had
clinical
gotten.
Clinical depression.
Yeah. Because there's nothing to do. Mm. You can't get a job. You have no money. Your future looks so
this
bleak.
This is when you've left.
This is now post-imprisonment. Mm. Depression really hit me hard. Mm. You know, when I realized, oh my goodness, my future has literally...
Because you got a conviction, you can't be employed, is that the
yes,
thing?
Yes, that's it. And the stigmatization of being an ex-convict, that tag, wherever it is you go, it's a shadow following you. No one wants anything to do with you. And just the fact that before, I mean, you worked so hard at school to build your life and, you know, make the most of
to be educated.
You know, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then now you've come out of prison, you're a dependent. Everything you eat, where you live, what you dress in, you depend on people. You're borrowing all the time, and you've got kids with you. I mean, it's like you've been destabilized. You know,
you've been discarded in society.
Exactly, exactly. So at that point, I got so depressed for about a year or two, and then realizing that the women who had also come out of prison were even in worse situations than I was, because they didn't have a place to stay. It was worse for them. At least I had my parents feeding us and accommodating us and ensuring that, you know...
You had support systems that they didn't have.
That they didn't have. Yeah. It was worse for them. So I even got more depressed, as I realized what kind of a situation this really was. And, you know, it's at that point I was like, oh my goodness me, if we don't do something, then this means it's a road, it's a path to death. And then it hit me when a lady who I served my sentence with, she was serving a 5-year sentence. She had her son with her. So I got into prison, got out, left her continuing with her serving her sentence. And when I got out, and when she got out, she didn't complete a year outside. She committed suicide, scorched herself and her son dead. And I could relate so well with that. And that's when I drew the line and I said, enough. No one other woman is going to kill themselves because of this stressful situation. Yeah.
I want to know, in Kenya, why this corruption is so deep and why is it particularly women who are victimized?
It's unfortunate that we've been unable to address this corruption issue. And, you know, it's such a dragon that's eating into our education, our health system. Everything is so broken and people just can't access the services that they deserve to, you know, economic opportunities, education opportunities, to build their lives to be much better. I mean, the poverty levels are so high. I know the government is trying the best they could, but still.
To think, though, that, you know, a judge and a courtroom is corrupt is where, you know, where do you start in society if that's corrupt?
Exactly. When you can't get justice at the very institutions that are mandated to give justice to its citizens. Mm. I think there are narratives that operate within our corrupt system that we really need to change. For instance, if you're rich and guilty, you can pay your way around. Yes. If you're poor and innocent, too bad for you. They suffer. The innocent ones are the ones who get
so
to suffer.
Why do they pick on women why do they pick on women particularly?
Women are very vulnerable and culturally, you know, women...
You're bottom of the pile?
Yes, yes, mm. yes, yes. Mm. We've got to fight to have our space and our voice. You know, cultural dynamics.
Is there any women's rights?
There are lots of them really trying to push for women rights, you know. Some great milestones, but honestly, still a long way to go. Yeah.
So who isn't respecting women? Is it men or is it, you know, other women? You know, who's horrible to each other? Who is it?
I'd start by saying mostly men, because even when we get laws, for instance, to have more women in the legislature, you'll just find that they're kicked out. They're not given the support they deserve.
Or they're gossiped about.
Exactly.
I imagine, kind of like, put them down and tell everyone they're bad when they're not.
Exactly. Yeah. And the weighing scale, if a man does something and a woman does the same exact thing, the woman is judged so harshly and the man can walk scot-free with the same thing that they've done. Mm. So it's not equal at all. We're not on the same pedestal, men and women. Mm. So that's the beginning place. Mm. And then, of course, now the cultural dynamics of, you know, you're a woman. What are you talking about? You shouldn't be talking at this space and things like those. Yeah,
just
that really
terrible.
Affects it.
So you got to this complete rock bottom stage. You thought, I'm going to do something to help. What was your next move?
Yeah. So when I drew the line after my friend committed suicide, I now say to myself, enough. I can't get a job. No one wants anything to do with me. So the best thing now to do is to get all these women together and build up on our voices, because we are people too. We need our space. We need the support we deserve. We're human beings too. It's not like just because we've served sentences in prison, now we've come out, we're like lepers and not needed in society.
Are most of them not guilty then?
Most of the women, I'd say close to 70%. Mm-hmm. Why in prison? Not because they're criminals, but it's either because they couldn't get legal representation or they didn't even understand the whole process because it's English ran and it's a language that they don't understand, so they couldn't even understand the charges that they were up against. And just survival, petty crimes. Mm-hmm. So they really didn't deserve to be in prison in the first place. And then now they are out and no options. It even gets worse. So the idea to come up with a social enterprise where first and foremost, we would create awareness across the country about women leaving prison, what the issues of imprisonment are, challenges of reintegrating back into society, what needs to be done, and then empowering ourselves to then be able to fit in, whether it's in, back into employment, start a small business, or get an opportunity to continue with your education.
So tell me what you did. You had this idea, but how did you start it?
Yeah. So I spoke.
And what's the name?
Yeah. So
enterprise.
Yeah. So I set up Clean Start with the support of my dad.
Yay!
Yes.
Good to dad. Give.
Yeah. He really was a rock and a support at that particular time.
Wonderful.
He still is. And so it was, you know, to give us a clean start, you know, as the name suggests.
Brilliant.
And Clean Start now has grown from that little idea to, you know, along the way, coming together as a number of women who had been impacted by imprisonment, and then meeting Joss Carathers, who had just landed in Kenya from the UK, who worked previously with a charity called Risago Trust here in London. And they empowered 16 to 24-year-olds youths who came from disadvantaged backgrounds, and they used the coaching
system.
So she
understands about charities, people, the system.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, she had that background.
Yeah.
And she had a tried and tested formula of how to empower these women, these young girls, and these children to then now come out being successful, independent, and, you know, not victims, but victors, positive mentality and all that.
So tell me, Teresa, do you do the program when they're in prison or when they've left?
We start journeying with them while they're still within the correctional institutions.
And the people who run these are okay about you coming in?
Very okay.
Oh.
We had great buy-in by the institutions because they viewed us as part of the system. I mean, we had been imprisoned in those very institutions. And so when we came to suggest that we would run these programs, they didn't view us as outsiders. They viewed us as, you know, these are part of the system. These are part of us.
I also understand it. You understand it more than anyone.
In and out.
So what was it like going in for the first time, being a free person, going in with an idea? How did the women respond to you?
The women, always positive. To see someone who's come back in, to see them.
Because so is it emotional?
Very, very emotional. Just very emotional to date.
The tears and...
Yeah. It's tough.
And you hear stories which break your heart.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a story?
So there's this lady who worked within the banking institution for close to 25 good years. Again, she got framed, got imprisoned for 4 years. When she got imprisoned, her children had to drop out of university, drop out of school. She literally lost everything, starting with her pension. Got depressed, got high blood pressure, got very sick. And then after really having a very tough, horrible time while on the inside, got out, got to join the Clean Start System platform. And we've been journeying together, but it's really been so tough to see this lady now in her older years trying to rebuild her life. However, we've managed to support her, start her small business, small cafe, and also support her children get back to complete their education. And one of them is a lawyer now. Mm. Yeah, and working with a research consultant who we just recently hired, which is interesting. So that's a beautiful journey. But, you know, the emotional health issues that impact these women. And then a younger girl who I met while in prison, who was having 1.5 years, came from a very broken background, her mom passed away when she was a young girl in primary. She was a firstborn, had to take care of her siblings when her mom passed on. And it really was tough for her. Got married as a teenager because she thought this man would support her and her siblings.
Mm-hmm. She wants some security. Yeah.
Exactly. It ended up being such a rough marriage for her. She went through so much abuse, had three children, kicked out. And then after all that trauma, she then ends up being framed by her employer because some money got lost. And the employer said, you've got to pay the price for this now. She ended up being imprisoned. And so I met her while in prison, but I was very awed by her confidence and, you know, the way she articulated herself and her goals and her dreams to become a journalist in future and all that, despite all the trauma that she had been through. She then eventually got out, joined the Clean Start platform, been through our programs, and now she's working with us at Clean Start as a social, media coordinator.
Great. Yeah.
It's she's incredible. Doing her dream. It's amazing.
She's doing her dream.
Back to school now. You know, in high school, she sits her high school exams end of this year. And she's very optimistic about joining campus and then going on to become a journalist. So she's on her path to realize her greatest fantastic potential.
How do you get, but even though she's trained, how will you still get rid of a stigma of the prison? You know, how will that help? You know, how can you persuade employees that this person is good?
That's the toughest job we have.
Yeah.
And we're doing it bit by bit by educating society and showcasing.
You can go and do talks at their business and, and say, look, these people have been through a lot, they've got skills.
Exactly, that's what we do. So we go to a lot of the corporates, we offer team building services to corporates, and while there, you know, we showcase we women who have been, who have...
Also show them that you are just like everybody else.
Exactly.
You know, if you go into their thing and then do a presentation, you say, but actually, if I was in prison, they're you. You know, they can't. And then the idea's kind of been cracked, hasn't it? It's like we can see that you're a real person, not a criminal.
Yeah. And Clean Start is very deliberate because we have about seven to eight women with lived prison experiences who are part of the team working, you know, at Clean Start to drive this vision forward. So this is for the affected women, you know, pushing this vision forward. So wherever it is, we will get an opportunity to talk about the work we do. You'll find a woman who has lived prison experience talking about it.
Fantastic. So tell us how we can in the West, how can we help you?
Lots of ways. That would be lovely. So we're looking at scholarships, you know, funding for scholarships for these girls to continue with their education. And, you know, through our website, www.cleanstart.co.ke, anyone could get in onto our website and, you know, find a way of how they could plug in and support us with scholarships to be able to support these girls to be able to continue with their education, or alternatively, support us to take as many women and girls through our SPEAR program. You know, a program goes for about six weeks, you know. So those are some of the key ways that people from the West could plug in and support us, impact as many lives as possible. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous and telling us your dramatic, terrible story, but to be able to turn around your life and other people's life. Tell me how that makes you feel.
Amazing. Incredible. To remember the time when I was so depressed and so down, and to see how the Clean Start journey has transformed me to where I am, and to think that that's the same possibility of an opportunity we could offer this woman from her lowest moment to transform her life, to live the best version of herself that she could be. It's just incredible. And to see these women and girls who we have impacted through our programs become the best versions of themselves. It's just incredible to see them and to see their lives turn around. Love doing this throughout.
Wonderful. Teresa Jerrigay, thank you so much for coming onto Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And for more amazing women, always try Radio Gorgeous.